You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Keo Griffith. Keo, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, Brainerd. Thank you for having me in the show.
Let's talk about what you're working on now. I know you work a bit, but I'd love to know what it is that you're doing now in the studio.
Well, I work on several things at once. I think a lot of people do this naturally these days. So I have a practice where I do contemporary artwork and design work and then a lot of music-based work or sound-based work. And the most current one, which is a big project, is where I've been invited to go to an island. It's a remote island in the western part of Japan. And it's a island that's about 5 miles long, where there are about 66 people there who are fishermen or farmers. And it used
So before you go on, what island is it? That sounds amazing.
Oh, sorry. It's called Okinoshima.
Okay.
And it's in the area that's called the Inland Sea in Japan, where there are thousands of these islands, obviously some bigger than others. And, you know, I think over these decades, younger people have moved to the cities, so a lot of them are abandoned or they've decreased in population. So this island that I'm doing my research project in is one of those islands where it's the population has decreased by probably 60%. Used to be hundreds of people on this island, and now it's in the 66 people maybe, and half the homes are vacant. But they continue their lives going to open sea. They catch their fish in, you know, fishing nets that are stretched along this ocean for about a mile, and they can live off their land. So what was remarkable about this is I was part of the triennial over there in Japan last year to do a sound project. And in this sound installation, I've traveled all over the country to record people's voices and ask them to contribute either a reading or something about their lives and
dialect. The project you're describing now, going around talking to people, is what was in the triennial last time?
Yes, sorry. I'm jumping from one thing to another.
That's fine. Jump all around. That's no problem. Go through that a little more, because of course I want to get back to that island and know just what you're doing out there. But in the triennial, tell me a little bit more about those voices,
so this,
and how that was presented.
Yes. So this was the Aichi Triennial, which was in Nagoya, Japan, which is pretty much the center of the whole country. And I traveled over 2 months around the country collecting dialects. And the purpose of that was to collect voices and in their own natural dialect that were either going to, you know, disappear over decades for the same reason where, you know, people in these country towns are decreasing in their population as well. And most important was to document voices of people, indigenous people in the north, the Ainu, and also people in the south in Okinawa who were demonstrating against the American bases, which is kind of like a current problem right now. But this was last summer in 2016. So in the end, I collected over 1,000 voices.
Wow.
And they've all contributed their story in their own history over the decades in Japan. And
these voices are in Japanese or English?
Yes. Mostly Japanese. And then I've also recorded people who live there who are from other countries as well about their experience, too.
so and then how one of presented. Yeah, yeah. I'll just go on. Yeah.
Okay. So one of the contributors of The Voice was this woman who was a curator, and she happened to be from this island that I'm doing my current project at. So I sat with her and I've took a recording of her reading, and later, months later, I met her again, and then she approached me and said, can you do something in a project on my island? And I had no information about this place. I did some research and I found out that it was a place where got famous for a popular 70s popular music song back then about these women from other islands who would travel to this island to be wed to these fishermen. And I remember this song really well. And so when I actually went there was, I made two trips. The first one was this summer in 2017. And I spent about a week. And I sat on the ledge of the island observing the main island that's across this narrow channel with these women who were in their 60s or 70s. They were all these brides, you know, bride that traveled over to the island from other parts of the country to be wed to these fishermen. And half of them were there because of the song. You know, the song got pretty much romanticized over the decades, and it was a thing that they wanted to do, which I thought was very interesting.
You mean the fact that they wanted to go there and marry and that whole
yes.
system?
Yes, yeah, that whole thing, yeah. So, you know, the power of the song was experienced right there with me and these women who are looking over the channel. So here's the thing. With all this gentrification and, you know, like the economic problem, all that that's happening all over the world, this was kind of like a microcosm of the whole situation. And the islanders wanted a bridge to cross over this narrow channel that's about 1,000 feet, not too far away. And I'm looking at the other side, and these women are looking at the other side, and I'm asking them, well, you know, you can see the other side. Why is it so hard to just take your boat over there? And they say, well, we've already left that part. We have no interest in going back there, but we want our kids to cross over whenever they want to. And if they had a bridge, it would make that more easier. And in my mind, when I first got to the island, I thought, well, this is really interesting because it made me feel very much at home. When I'm born and raised in Japan for, I need to tell it that first. So when I got to this island first, I felt like it took me back to my childhood. It was well preserved.
And why are you where were you born and raised that looked like that? That sounds like such an exceptional place with a landscape.
I'm born in the 60s, and that was I'm born in the Tokyo area, and you know, things were not as technologically advanced back then. You know, you had trolley cars, and you know, like we take the bus everywhere, and some of the streets in the city weren't paved yet. You know, very much different from how Tokyo looks right now. So, so it made me feel like that, where you know, you could just walk to anyone, and you can talk to anyone. The rice vendors right there. You know, the milkman still exists. It's that sort of thing, right? Where you think of the good old days.
Right.
where things actually work between people without, you know, without all our devices getting in the way. So obviously they don't have any internet there, and it's small and well contained. And they're asking me to, you know, if there's a way that my artistic practice could involve building a bridge so that they can have visitors coming over. And right away in my mind, I'm thinking, no, I don't want that to happen.
Before you say that, of course, it's like an aspect of gentrification. When you say a bridge, of course, we're talking about a physical bridge to get to the island.
Yes, a physical. Yes, a physical bridge.
And now you get to the island by boat or.
Oh yeah, there's a boat, which is a free service of the town, I guess, of the main island there. And there are like three or four men who are at the station, and they transport you over there. And, you know, the boat ride is within 3 to 4 minutes, really. And that in itself is very comforting and romantic in its way. And I've seen pictures where, you know, the bride-to-be stands on these boats and then they're carried over to the island. So anyway.
Wow. That starts out pretty romantic. That sounds good.
It is. with the sunset and then, you know, in the background with all these thousands of other islands and silhouettes. So you kind of get the idea, I think, you know. And the climate is very much close, similar to the Mediterranean. It's the only area in Japan where you can grow olives. So that's what they're famous for. They export olives there to the rest of the country.
And so your project, they kind of asked or mentioned building a bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in this bridge, it became quite troublesome for me because I, for one thing, didn't want anybody careless. You know, I don't want to be judgmental or anything, but, you know, that does happen. I didn't want anybody careless to just travel over there and then, you know, just park their car and then trash the place, for one thing.
But you don't want it to turn into a tourist destination.
Exactly.
It would be
exactly.
Gentrified.
Exactly. All that stuff, which could easily happen. Anything attractive could be trampled on. So the bridge obviously is a bigger construction, and it's a larger project that needs funding and everything. So that's in the future. But in the meantime, I also stumbled on the idea of what an arts festival is and its function. And it made me think about the previous festivals that happened in that area. They've had three before, the one that I'm going to be involved in. And I was given a tour to see all these other installations and sculptures that happened already. And, you know, to be honest, It just didn't make sense to me because, you know, you come from another country as a visitor and then you prop up this huge metal piece or concrete or whatever it is in the middle of this beautiful landscape. And in reality, it's like a blocked view, you know,
right.
And it takes up valuable island space. That where you can't grow, you know, or harvest. And, you know, for me, it's quite senseless, I think, you know, when an artist decides to that is what they want to do, I think. I think there needs to be a little bit more of a responsibility when you approach to do something in a foreign land as a visitor. So my idea to work with the Islanders was, number one, they want their kids to come back. Oops. Sorry. Did you get that in the phone?
No, I didn't hear anything.
Is that? Okay, good, okay. Good. Okay, there's a beep coming through my phone. So
they want their kids to come back because kids that are born there leave.
So, you know, it used to be really good business for them to fish. You know, they would get the tunas and the octopus, plenty of lobsters that were lucrative in the, you know, the Tokyo fish market. But now that market has also become competitive with the world trade, you know, kind of like Amazon, right? Where they have to compete with other fish markets around the country, you know, as far as Spain. So, which means that they have to come down in their price, and at that point, they're not making anything to make a living. So, in their current condition, they're not really earning anything, and also not paying much tax. But the most important thing is they can live off their land and the ocean that they're surrounded by, which I think is quite remarkable for this time and age where, you know, you are, most of us are quite dependent, in fact, codependent with, you know, work, taxes, insurance, you know, all that stuff that you need to be able to get by.
Yeah, it sounds really utopic in a way. It is
very utopic, and so I sat down with them. I just kept asking them questions of their needs and what other situations they're faced with. One of the big topics was that they have lost a lot of the younger generation to the cities because there's just not any work there. Number one, that, you know, would be lucrative enough for them to make a living. Number two, that is interesting for them, right? So out of 66 people, the two are these kids who are in their, you know, one's a three-year-old and one's a seven-year-old. And that's it, really. And they're there because their father happened to find work in a nearby city. So they're in the island part-time, basically, but they're not really permanent residents.
So,
as an artist, and I got to put artists in parentheses because I feel like my practice has changed quite a bit, where I'm doing more social type of work. And I thought, in this scenario with the fishermen and the farmers there, that I need to create something that is more valuable to them than to me, and maybe I could help them instead of me being the person who takes the credit of being artist. And in the brainstorm with them, we decided that how would it be if we created some type of a movement with them. And movement is, you know, as you know, an artistic practice, right? That seems to be around still, but it seems like it's a thing of the past. And
movement in the sense of performance, dance?
Movement as in artistic movement, as in isms.
Oh, right, an artistic movement.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like surrealism,
yeah.
Or cubism, mm-hmm. Or Foxes, mm-hmm. Or something like that.
Yeah, and here's the thing. The islanders keep asking me about art and trying to understand what contemporary art is. And I really appreciate that they're very inquisitive and they don't give up until they could really grasp what this is all about. But in return, when I asked them about fish, vegetables, and the fruit that they can get off their land, I found out that they were much better at describing one fish from another, for example. And that, to me, felt like this is quite a seasoned curator who can do this, you know? Even the St. Cloud fish, just the way that the eyes look or the scale looks. And they can go into detail and talk about it in for minutes. And when I caught on that, I thought, maybe there is a way that I could work with them where I could start together some type of a new arts and crafts movement with them that they could appreciate, that they could understand. So that is where I'm at right now with the project with them. And also the other thing that came up in my talks with them is to make use of these abandoned homes on the island and turn them into some type of a residency to invite people, but not in terms of having them create something and leaving something behind as an object, but inviting people who are performers to take residence for a month or maybe a little longer. While I was there, I also found out that there had been an old theater form, like a old kabuki art form that existed about 1,000 years ago. And I thought that could be a source of research where people could come and study that. And then these are performers, of course. And then they could create some kind of performance piece with the local musicians or local, movement artists or dancers. And what they leave behind is a performance instead of an object that, or physical object that takes up space. And when that inspiration came up, I thought, this bridge that needs to be built could serve as a second purpose. It could double up as a stage that could be crossed over this narrow channel, and then it could be a stage over the water where these performances could take place. So that's pretty much where I'm at with this project here, but this is a big project.
So creating a stage that would be over the water where there would be performers.
Yes.
And so that's one aspect of that. And also you said there would be, in terms of a movement, a kind of craft movement there that people do. That's a separate issue, isn't it? So how would that one work?
Well, it's actually not that separate because I've left out another important detail. I met one of the young people. He's in his 30s, and he's a shipbuilder, a traditional shipbuilder who's learned this craft of building ships from raw pine wood. It's sort of a Shinto based art form, and in this wooden ship it's used as a ceremony vessel to carry the taiko drum around the island every year, or I think maybe twice every year, to do these festivals where they have the festival of the drums drumming up and battling against other drums from the other parts of the island to celebrate some aspect of the Shinto religion, as in the harvest or the New Year's, I think. Anyway, so he is the only person left on the island who knows this craft. And in meeting him, I talked about this bridge, and he seemed to know how to be able to, you know, how to make this bridge and turn it into also a performance stage with a technique that he knows. And that's where this idea of the crafts movement kind of surfaced for me. Is when I learned about him, knowing how he could do this, and then I talked to these other fishermen on the island, they too, when they were younger, knew how to build these things.
That's exciting, and I'm glad you explained all that. And so the one thing that is still a part of this project that you haven't explained, and maybe because it's part of your work out there, is what will happen with some of the abandoned houses on that island.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, this was a question, wasn't it?
Yeah. What will happen with those abandoned homes on the property?
What will happen with those? Oh, okay. Yeah. One of the houses I was thinking about turning into a, you know, I guess it's like a museum, but, you know, obviously a smaller scale, not too big, where you can see archives of, you know, what's been on the island in the past. It was also a major battle scene of the Civil War in medieval times, and they have records and relics from that time too. And also, for my own sake, I thought that if I was going to spend, you know, a good amount of time there, that I want to document their lives and their knowledge about, you know, harvesting or fishing and the intricate things that they do, you know, like even building a fishnet by hand. So, you know, collecting photographs and writing about these things, and maybe compiling into a book, and perhaps having one of the houses full of material where you can do research about these things. And then these other buildings would be made into you know, accommodations for people who in the future may travel there to do research on the island for creating their own pieces to perform.
I like that. So it could serve as a future kind of cultural center of some
exactly,
kind.
Exactly. Yeah. So in doing that, I'm envisioning hopefully that, you know, it will create work, new jobs for people who might be interested in, you know, spending their time there. So, in a nutshell, you know, it's sort of this thing where it's like, you know, how do you get people to move out of the urban landscape back to the rural landscape and create jobs that are worthwhile for them?
Right.
Which I think needs to kind of happen globally, really. You know, living in Los Angeles, it's already become this city that's, I think, I've seen somewhere in a post, maybe on Facebook, that it's the population is much, much more massive than half the states in the United States, something like that. It's overcrowded, and it's also... you know, you can't afford to live here. The rent is too high, either from gentrification or you know, the IT corporations have moved in, and, you know, like in Silicon Beach in Venice, for example. And, you know, this happens in New York, of course, or San Francisco, where the rent fees start tripling or quadrupling, right?
Right.
And then you can't stay there anymore. You can't really make any sense of having a community.
Right. And the one thing you also mentioned was the children who have left, and if I understood right, you know, they'd like to come back. How does this project, is it because of the cultural things that you're potentially creating there and this platform that children might come back?
I'm hoping so. I think one of the things with the children or the younger generation, the reason why they moved to the city is because other, you know, people their age move out there and then they create a scene, right? And that scene is, you know, whatever in their words are, is cool, for example, right? So if you define what that cool is and break it down, it's, you know, it's one of the several things that happens is that, you know, there's a really nice cafe they go to, or there's a really good concert scene that they go to. And, you know, it depends on whatever that is defined as culture that's in the urban setting. But if they were the ones who created their own cool culture, I think they have more power to themselves, and also they may feel ownership over it rather than being eternal, you know, guests or fans to these events. And I think if something like that changed over time, it would be somewhat, I wouldn't say revolutionary, but I think that there would be some change, you know, that could happen. It's very similar to what's going on with the economy, right? You know, in a world where you do demonstrations and rallies and, you know, hundreds of thousands of people show up, and then at the end of the day, when it's 10 o'clock, you go home, and then you wake up the next morning and still nothing happens, right? And that's the reality right now.
Right.
But I think you can still change things in other ways. I think Bitcoin is somewhat like that. Bitcoin is this, you know, obviously, you know, but another currency system that is driven by people who own this currency, right? It's not such a thing like stock, or where, you know, if you wanted to buy Amazon stock, it's $1,000, and if you don't have $1,000, you can't buy that share. If it's a Bitcoin, if you wanted to buy a coin, you can buy a fraction of it, and you can still be in the game. And
right.
I think that's revolutionary.
Mm. And when will this project be? So you're traveling out there and doing this. When will it be?
Well, it's long term. It's long term. It's going to start realistically next summer, and then it'll probably be going on for maybe a few years, including that bridge. And it's going to be submitted as a project that's going to be part of a triennial in that area, and that's for 2019. So I think anywhere from 2018 to 2020, maybe 21, I'll be going, making several trips over there.
That sounds wonderful. I'm glad you explained that project, and I wish you the best of luck with it. I hope I can come
Sorry,
see it.
Yes, please. I would love that, especially someone like you, I think, would really, you know, benefit from this.
Yeah,
from what I read about you on the internet,
I really would. And so before we go, I want to ask you the last question I always ask, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
Oh, okay. I'm reading Raymond Williams quite a bit lately. And Raymond Williams is a philosopher from the 1960s. I think that's when he was very active. A Welsh philosopher and novelist. And his inquiry was about culture and society, or culture and economics, a little bit of politics. And he would touch on subjects like education and, you know, the media, language, and social history over time. So the current book I'm reading of his is called The Long Revolution, which was published in, I think, 1963 first. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Keo, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure hearing about your... Thank you so much for talking with me.
No, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.